Dr. Rebecca Sonnenschein, who's the Medical Director and Division of Disease Control Administrator for the Maricopa County Department of Health, and she'll be co-presenting with Jen Adair, who's an epi-surveillance nurse with the same health department, and they're going to be discussing surveillance for Zika virus among pregnant unaccompanied minors during the last few years. And I will mention that Rebecca is my boss, so if you don't have any questions, compliments will be accepted.
Thank you, Kate, for that kind introduction. Jen and I are here to present the world's longest title, which is itself a product of collaboration of local, state, and multiple federal agencies. This was cleared by the Department of Health and Human Services. I've never had that happen before. And I also want to acknowledge that Laura Misogatis is here in the audience if you have any questions for the Office of Refugee Resettlement. So basically what this title is Maricopa County, which is the largest county in Arizona, obviously a state that borders Mexico, encountered a new issue where pregnant, unaccompanied children, also known as unaccompanied minors, were migrating through Central America and Mexico, and many of the girls were pregnant and needed to be tested and monitored for Zika. And this was a new issue for us, so we're here to describe the process and the story. And I'm lucky to have my co-presenter, Jen Adair, who is one of our nurse epidemiologists, who basically developed and designed this whole process with her colleagues and is really the mastermind and deserves all the credit. So go ahead, Jen. Oh, and this is my disclaimer.
No one has ever called me a mastermind in public before. I'm liking it. Okay, so a quick review of our background and methods here. Unaccompanied children, as some of you might know, are basically kids who show up from another country in the United States without a legal status here, without being 18 years old, and without a parent. And the way that our government responds to these kids is regulated. It's a protocol that comes from statute and from some court decisions and is different from the way adults are handled. As our plenary speaker said this morning, basically within 72 hours of being picked up by Border Patrol, they are put in the custody of the Office of Refugee Resettlement, or ORR. This is just to show you, if you didn't hear it in the news, that there was an unprecedented high level of these kids arriving to our border in 2014, a subsequent dip, but again, very high levels last fiscal year. The kids that are in ORR programs are overwhelmingly from the north, from three countries in Central America, Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador. They're 67% male, and they skew towards older teens, but they include kids of all ages. A lot of these kids, the pregnant minors that we're concerned about here, have potential Zika exposure in their home countries, but even if they're from a highland area and maybe it's not a concern at home, they definitely pass through routes that expose them to Zika on the way to the United States. So a little bit about this, how this works if you haven't encountered this population. These kids leave their home country. They make a very difficult and dangerous journey, and the ones that make it to our border are often apprehended by Border Patrol. And from there, like I said, within 72 hours, they get handed over to ORR. ORR, there's different placements that are possible, but often where these kids end up is in shelters that are state licensed. They are run by nonprofit agencies or places that ORR has a contract with, and a lot of things happen at these shelters. They get some health screenings, they get some education services, case management, and it's at this point that they're getting referred to our office for Zika virus testing. They spend about a month-ish in these shelters. And meanwhile, the case managers there are trying to figure out if there's some viable candidate in the United States to take custody of these kids while their legal status is being figured out. So basically what happened is someone from one of these shelters somehow got our nurse's phone number and called up and said, I've got these three pregnant girls from Guatemala. Am I supposed to test them for Zika or something? And I had no idea these shelters were in our county. We had no process in place for working with them. We hadn't communicated with them before on this, and so we were kind of starting from zero. So our objective was to establish such a system, to make sure these girls were tested appropriately and that education was provided both to them and the people taking care of them. to make sure their results were getting interpreted and also that those results were being communicated, because like I said, a lot of times by the time we get their results, the child might already be gone with their sponsor. So to establish this process, we've been working with 7 ORR contracted shelters in our county. We've basically what's worked is to identify kind of a liaison at each one of these shelters and to figure out the process with those liaisons. We've also, it's really been about establishing relationships also with the providers and the community that care for these girls. The shelters don't have a doctor in them. They're taking them in a van to an OB visit somewhere. And so we had to figure out how to collect specimens because the shelters don't sometimes have a phlebotomist, sometimes don't. Sometimes we get it from the OB. Sometimes they truck these kids to the office and I draw them myself. So it's been, it took a process to figure that out. We do the testing at our state public health lab. So basically the way it works is the medical assistant at the shelter calls me or my coworker Bernie up. We get some basic demographic data. We set up a time to interview the girl, either in person or on the phone. We do a bunch of data entry, and then we figure out how to get those specimens and to get them to our lab. We're tracking this basically on an Excel spreadsheet at this point. Our regular data, our regular surveillance database isn't really setting up for keeping track of the aunt in Florida where this kid's gonna be placed eventually. So we track the data in Excel. This took an amazing amount of staff time for this little 100, you know, kids that have been referred. At times, probably 3/4 of an FTE for a nurse and 3/4 of an investigator's time as well. So I don't know if you've encountered these kids, but to put a picture in your mind of who I might be talking to in one of these interviews, first of all, they're kids. Like a lot of us, when we do our interviews, it's mostly adults. They're developmentally kids, and you have to change the way you talk to them because of that. They're also kids who almost all have some trauma history, and that might be related to why they left their country or things that happened on the way here or attached to their pregnancy. So we had to modify some parts of our Zika interview because the last thing I want to do is re-traumatize a kid in order to get some of our data, right? These kids often are from the Guatemalan highlands, from like Huehuetenango, San Marcos, Quetzaltenango, and those are Mayan areas, and some of these kids speak Spanish as a second language. We've had some that don't speak Spanish at all, so we're looking for a Quiche interpreter, or Mam, or Chu, or Acateco. Some of these kids don't read very well in any language, so those fancy CDC handouts in Spanish, not helping a lot. And some have really no healthcare experience. Maybe people from their, where they're from don't go to the doctor unless they're very gravely ill. Okay, the other complicated thing is communicating results. And our partners at ORR have been amazing about helping us make this happen. When their test results come back, they're only in these shelters a month, so it's a pretty good chance that when final results get back, they may be gone. So that means that in some way the results need to get from our state lab to me, to our state people, to their local people, also to ORR, also to the doctor that was taking care of them here, also to the doctor that will be taking care of them there. And that was pretty complicated to figure out. It talks a little bit about the process here. In the case of a positive result, which we've had, we also want to make sure that there's clinical contact in there somewhere, whether it's a doc from ORR or our physician, our nurse, making contact with a clinical person on the other side, because we don't want to wait for this whole process. It's going to happen, but we want to also make sure the clinicians talk. And Dr. Sonnenschein is going to talk about our results.
Great, thank you. I feel like we did that. Okay, so I am just going to go over the results, and we used an N of 107. Basically, this is the beginning of 2016 when we first encountered these pregnant girls, all the way through May 10th. And what you can see is it started with just a few, and it basically followed the Zika epidemiology of the whole region. With peak in September, October, and then really came down in December, January, and we haven't had nearly as many since then. So looking at the country of origin of the individuals that we encountered, it closely mirrored what we see nationally. And the majority of kids were from Guatemala and also from Honduras and El Salvador. The age also mirrored what ORR's numbers show nationally, and the vast majority were 15 to 17 years. So these were older adolescents, but again, they're still adolescents. So this is a pie chart, which basically we're going to take it in two parts. So first I want to focus on the fact that out of the 107 girls referred, all of them were pregnant but one. So there's a lot of pregnancy happening, and we don't actually know the percent of girls that came into Maricopa County who were pregnant, but we're told that in Texas they did look at that, and it was actually 50%. So a lot of these girls are arriving pregnant. Of the 107, 83 or 78% of them did get tested. 10 girls, 12% of them had laboratory evidence of Zika or an unspecified flavivirus. And for any of you who have been going to the Zika sessions, you know that the laboratory results are very complicated, especially for these girls who are from countries that have dengue endemic as well. So in Maricopa County, our baseline rates, if you take the denominator of everyone who was tested, there's a 3.2% positivity rate. And if you look at just pregnant women, we have a 1.1% positivity rate. So we're looking at least four times the likelihood of being either having some positive laboratory result for Zika or an unspecified flavivirus. And then 69% did have negative laboratories. So now I'm going to focus on the 23% that were untested. And Jen really alluded to the reasons why they might be untested, but two of them delivered before they could be tested. 17 of them left Arizona before they could obtain testing. And that was really one of our biggest challenges, was there was very little notice that a minor was going to be reunited with a sponsor. And we would think that they're coming in for a blood draw next week, and boom, they're gone. And then one of them was deemed not exposed. And then two of them were after the 12-week window where you could no longer get appropriate testing. So this is really to highlight how complex this system is. This shows you where the unaccompanied children were placed after they left Maricopa County. So of the 42% that were reunified with a sponsor, and a little over half are still awaiting reunification in the shelter, these are just the top states that they went to: California, Texas, Florida, and New Jersey. But you can see all the other locations, two or more, went there. So we're talking about going all across the country. So this is a process that really needs to involve states and counties all over the United States working with their federal partners. And one was repatriated to their country of origin. So what were our successes? The process for each unaccompanied minor took about 20 hours at the onset, and as Jen highlighted, we had almost two full FTEs working on just these unaccompanied children. But by the end, we had it streamlined down to less than 10 hours per unaccompanied child. Public health was able to establish relationships with ORR, contracted shelters, OB providers, and through the state, also with the Federal Office of Refugee Resettlement. And I just can't tell you how great it was to have ORR assist us directly. They would contact the shelters, and they actually enabled the shelters to share the data with the reunification location of each child so that we could make sure that not only did the child get the results, but that the sponsor got the results, and that the provider of that child got results. So basically, they were able to educate public health about their systems, and therefore we were able to develop systems to help these kids. And the challenges have already been discussed. There's a diversity in shelter arrangements, different OBs providing care to different ones. Some shelters had labs, some didn't. We had some kids from shelters getting health care in our community, even though they were in another county, and so then there were more cross-jurisdictional issues. Getting to the shelters, time, security, and distance, lots of staff turnover in the shelters. Obviously, these shelters have a lot of other priorities besides Zika testing for these kids. And everybody working with these minors is going for the same goal. We all want them to be safe and taken care of and get what they need. But there are competing priorities. The jurisdictional changes with little or no notice. And then ensuring that the unaccompanied child receives follow-up results, access to care in the new jurisdiction and outside of the ORR jurisdiction. And I think that's something that there was a lot of learning about. ORR provides care for these kids while they're in their jurisdiction, and they provide a case manager so that they can get access to care for 6 months after they leave the system. But there's no real mechanism to absolutely ensure these kids get the care they need once they're outside of ORR's jurisdiction. And then the processes vary a lot by state and local jurisdiction. ORR was telling us, well, if we call one state, they handle it this way, and if we call another state, they handle it another way. So we really need to talk to each other and figure this out. And I think the key learning we just covered, that these populations, they're vulnerable for a lot of reasons, and they also have a much greater risk for having exposure to Zika and flavivirus. It's important to take the developmental stage and the healthcare knowledge and language and culture into account when you're interviewing these kids. We have to make sure that they're followed on the CDC pregnancy registry, not just for data purposes, but to make sure that ultimately they get the services that they need once they're born. Relationship building was a key part of this, and as we learn each other's systems, we really can create a cross-jurisdictional system that works. And I just want to acknowledge the multitude of people, many of whom are in this room, who contributed to this whole project, and especially Laura at ORR. Thank you very much for your support.